While most people associate September 11th with Osama bin Laden, the real mastermind behind the attacks was a man named Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He is the subject of the new book by Terry McDermott and Josh Meyer called The Hunt for KSM, Inside the Pursuit and Takedown of the Real 9/11 Mastermind. The book traces the activities of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, or KSM, as he orchestrated dozens of terrorist plots throughout the world, such as the 1993 plot on the World Trade Center. Josh Meyer has reported on international terrorism for more than a decade. He's currently on the faculty at the Medill School of Journalism, where he's Director of Education and Outreach for the school's National Security Journalism Initiative based in Washington, D.C. Terry McDermott is the author of Perfect Soldiers and has worked at 8 newspapers for more than 30 years, most recently for 10 years at the Los Angeles Times, where he was a national correspondent. Again, the name of the book is The Hunt for KSM. Terry and Josh, welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Give us a sense, Terry, of how this came about, of what you wanted to write about, what you wanted to explore, and how the partnership between the two of you came to be.
Well, as you mentioned, Josh has been writing about terrorism since even before 9/11, and I started on 9/11. We actually worked together, I think, on the first significant KSM stories published anywhere at the Los Angeles Times in 2002. So, you know, he's been somebody we've been interested in since then for a variety of different reasons. I went off and did some other things for a while, and Josh kept on the KSM train. I mean, he never left. And about every year or so, he'd call me up and say, you know, we need to do this KSM book. And I never really quite understood what he meant, because we didn't know enough about the guy to write a book back then. And eventually, one of these calls, Josh says, well, it's not about him, it's about the guys chasing him. And I said, oh, why'd you tell me that? That's where the origin of the book was.
Josh, give us a sense of how long that, and we'll say KSM for the remainder of the interview, and a couple of times we'll elaborate for new listeners who are coming into the conversation. But for us, for the government, at what point did this man come on their radar?
He came on the radar, actually, in 1993, almost 20 years ago. They found him or found out about him through his nephew, Ramzi Youssef, whose real name is Abdul Basit, who was the World Trade Center bomber the first time around in 1993. KSM was his uncle, and he was at the other end of a wire transfer of money. I think it was about $660, but that set the train in motion. A small group of FBI agents who were chasing the co-conspirators in the first World Trade Center attacks quickly found out about KSM and started hunting him, too, back in 93, maybe early 94.
And so from that time to 2001, how much did he stay on the radar? Because you get the idea in the book that there was a hunt for the guy, but they just didn't have the money to keep it going.
You know, I don't know if it was a question about money, there were some very dedicated agents in the FBI's New York field office, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, who were literally following him around the world, trying to find him. He disappeared after one close call where they almost caught him and should have caught him, except for some bureaucratic interference by other people. But by the late 90s, I mean, the hunt for KSM sort of was a backwater issue, because the threat of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda was quickly coming to the forefront. One of the biggest mistakes they made was that they didn't link the two. They didn't realize that KSM, who had been, you know, sort of an independent operator until that time, that he'd actually joined forces with al-Qaeda. But it's also important to note that he didn't go work for al-Qaeda. He joined forces with them. He basically had his own ideas and his own network, and he wanted to do it his way. But you could say that he worked with al-Qaeda instead of for them.
And how did the two come together, Terry? I mean, how did that even happen?
Well, the close call that Josh mentioned happened in Doha, Qatar, in 1996, and he was, you know, hours probably away from being captured. And he was tipped off, and he fled. And where he fled to was Afghanistan. that in one of these horrible coincidences of history, at almost the same moment that Osama bin Laden was being chased out of the Sudan. So they both returned to Afghanistan for the first time since the anti-Soviet jihad in 96, and KSM took this airplane idea with them and introduced it to bin Laden, pitched it to bin Laden as a possible thing that al-Qaeda might be interested in doing. And initially, bin Laden declined, but within a year and a half, he changed his mind and called KSM, and this time they agreed on the plot, and he agreed to sponsor it.
You read in the book, and I guess the question is that there were a series of these near misses. He was on the radar, and he was when I say near misses, before 9/11, he was caught smuggling bomb making equipment on board an aircraft. He was held and then released. How does that happen?
Man, that's a great question. how does it happen? Indifference, that's probably not the right word, lack of attention. But nobody took this stuff, or I shouldn't say nobody, very few people took this stuff seriously before 9/11, even among journalists. Josh was working on this stuff in 99, 2000. We sat right next to each other, and everybody laughed at him. He said, why are you spending all that time on this stuff? Nobody cares about terrorism.
Get it on the front page.
Yeah.
I think one thing about KSM, I think you have to give him some credit for it too. I mean, I think like when he was almost caught in South Korea that time, I mean, he had a very ready answer for them. You know, he had 13 bottles of contact lens solution that had nitromethane in it, and they asked him why did he have so much, and he said there was a good sale in Manila. So I mean, you know, he was a very clever guy. He was very charismatic. He was a master of disguise. He had all these cover stories and identification and so forth. So, you know, he a lot of it was just how good he and how clever he was.
You do paint a picture in the book of a guy who is a complex personality, charming, funny, smart, but a stone cold killer as well. What were the motivations for this man to become a terrorist?
I think all these guys have complicated motivations, but at the base with KSM, as with a lot, I think it's just a fundamental, bitter, enduring anti-Semitism. Like a lot of people in that region, he grew up blaming Israel for all of his problems, all of his country's problems, all the problems of Muslims. And if you're going to blame Israel, then you blame the United States.
And when you look at the, because I found this part of the story fascinating, of what the motivation is and what keeps you going to want to make this your life's work, which is really a fascinating psychological profile, isn't it?
Go ahead, Josh.
I think that one of the, you know, and I covered the Justice Department, I covered terrorism for many years, and one of the things that always stuck with me was when John Ashcroft got up and said, you know, these people hate us simply because we love freedom.
Mm.
And, you know, that's just wrong. I mean, they have very articulated grievances, and, you know, I agree with Terry that it's anti-Semitism, but it was also political. I mean, I think he really sees himself, as he said this in Guantanamo at his earlier hearing, as like an Islamist George Washington, you know, the general, leading a ragtag army of insurgents fighting this oppressive, tyrannical government, you know, and he sees himself as the good guy, and that the U.S. is the bad guys who are, you know, harming Muslims around the world, and that he's there to protect them. So, however self-serving that is, that's his philosophy, and that's what his driving force has been.
And I asked the question, Terry, because this was, as you point out in the book, that it's very likely that 9/11 would not have happened if this man were caught prior, that it was his idea from the beginning, and he oversaw it from start to finish.
Yeah, or from A to Z, as he said at Guantanamo. Yeah, I think, you know, bin Laden could have been captured, and KSM, if he was still free, 9/11 would have happened in some guise or another. And if KSM had been captured, it would not have happened. I mean, it was his idea. He thought of the idea. He sought sponsorship for it. He managed its execution right down to the end. Other plots would have happened. I mean, if you caught him, you might have stopped this particular thing. Bin Laden certainly was intent on attacking the United States and probably would have. But this particular one would not have come off the ground.
The name of the book is the The Hunt for KSM by Terry McDermott and Josh Meyer. It is published by Little Brown. Of course, the book is The Hunt for KSM. We talked a little bit about the hunt prior to 9/11. Let's go past 9/11. And at that point, what goes into The Hunt for KSM? Who are the players in this investigation?
Well, fundamentally, after 9/11, the FBI was essentially blamed for allowing 9/11 to happen. So it was sidelined in the aftermath. And the CIA was given principal responsibility for conducting the search by the White House. So it was the CIA largely. The FBI still had some involvement, but they were always struggling to get a bigger piece of it, and they were always being shunted aside by the CIA.
And when you look at what, because this was not the only plot that he was involved in, so this was really a web of activity, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me one of the most important things is his connections to the Pakistani underworld. Al-Qaeda is essentially Arabs, some Central Asians, and they really are fish out of water in a place like Pakistan or even Afghanistan. And when the Taliban were no longer able to shelter them in Afghanistan, they could have been, mortally wounded by that. But KSM is the one who basically brought them through this underground railroad of sorts back into Pakistan and helped them regroup by having his network of Pakistani militants in Karachi and elsewhere, give them housing and protection and support. And those groups are all still there and very, very dangerous and extremely anti-American. So I think that's something that's, a very current threat.
And Josh,
yeah, one of the things that always struck us, even from back in 2002 when we first started looking into this, was why Pakistan was so far down the list of places to look. I mean, it was clear to us that he'd been there for most of a decade. That's where he ran the 9/11 plot out of. Mainly was Pakistan. He lived there in the open, in the same apartment for a lot of the time. And the whole focus on Afghanistan, I mean, after the invasion and after the government was toppled, why we stayed there, I really still don't have any idea. And yet this whole network in Pakistan remains to this day.
Mm.
And at any given time after 9/11, the most people the FBI had sent there were maybe 10 or so. I mean, which to me is fairly stunning that even if they were playing sort of second, second string to the CIA at that point, a country that big having that few agents on the ground there, I think says something about the U.S., war on terrorism as well.
You clarified earlier, and Josh, I'm interested in your thoughts on this. You clarified earlier about the link with KSM to Al-Qaeda and clarify that it wasn't really a partnership per se. But what's interesting is that there was such a focus on bin Laden and such a focus on Al-Qaeda that the importance of KSM was ultimately lost in that.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the huge shortcomings. I mean, we set out covering terrorism. I've read so many of these books about terrorism that I even if it's my job to get paid to read them, I can't read them. They're kind of boring. What we set out to do is tell a story, and it's an amazing story. The more we looked into it, about how they chased this guy and how he was able to escape. But there's also really important lessons to be learned from all this, and that's one of them, which is that while they were looking at Al-Qaeda and focusing all this resources and attention on that, you have this guy who sort of comes out of nowhere and leads this plot fairly independently with some help from Al-Qaeda and some money. But, I think the lesson you learn from this is that, you can't focus on some group like Al-Qaeda and not watch, for people like KSM, because I think that, he just fell through the cracks. I mean, the CIA had a bin Laden station that didn't read intelligence traffic unless it was about Al-Qaeda. And so they literally didn't read some of the stuff about KSM because they didn't think he was Al-Qaeda, when it turns out that he was.
You tell an interesting...
Or working with him, yeah.
You tell an interesting...
I think, generally speaking, the government can only focus on one thing at a time. It just doesn't seem to have the capacity to see multiple issues. And we still kind of imagine all of our enemies as being states, right? Even though we know intellectually that Al-Qaeda was not a state, we tend to treat it as one. And to look directly at it, and we look at an order of battle and the structure and a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And jihadism isn't like that. I mean, it's mushy. It's overlapping layers of networks. And KSM was in the middle of a lot of them. So you almost couldn't look anywhere without seeing them. But if you weren't looking, you weren't going to see them.
You write in the book about the famous mugshot, which you use on the cover of the book. It's the picture that we so identify with KSM, of this rumpled guy with one eye half shut and the rumpled hair, and it just looks like a mess. And the story behind that is really quite fascinating. I don't know which of the two of you would like to take on this the tale of telling the story.
Go ahead, Josh.
You mean of how he was captured, or the photo, or
yeah, ultimately, I mean, obviously the photo was taken right after the capture, but
right.
but there was concerns that he would look too good in the photo.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, after he, and George Tenet, the former CIA director, touches on this a little bit in his book. You know, as soon as he was captured, there were immediately some images that were floating around out there of him, you know, sort of looking heroic or defiant and so forth. And so there were people within the highest ranks of the CIA, one person in particular, as we mentioned in the book, who said, you know, that's not right. You know, we got to get a better photo of him than that out there, you know, showing him for what he is, especially when he was caught. So, you know, what we were told is that, you know, there were photos taken of him, maybe those weren't even good enough, and so that, you know, one agent messed up his hair and they took another photo that was sufficiently unflattering, and that's the one that you see in the now iconic photo. He doesn't look very happy in that photo.
In your mind, Josh, who are the heroes that ultimately brought him down?
You know, I think that there were some heroes at every step of this. I think Frank Pellegrino, this FBI agent, and his sidekick, this guy Matt Bashir from the New York Port Authority, you know, essentially a police department, they're heroes for chasing this guy from 1993 almost till 2000. Bashir left in 2000, Frank continued, you know, and, you know, you would think, you know, that these guys should be, you know, goats in all this, scapegoats, but, you know, but they really tried as hard as they could to find him, and there were obstacles thrown in their way from within the FBI, from the CIA, from Pakistan, from Qatar. I think after 9/11, I think that, you know, there's some credit goes to the, a lot of it goes to some FBI agents on the ground in Pakistan. Some goes to the CIA, too, and even some goes to some elements of the Pakistan government. I mean, we have some, you know, very touching scenes in the book about how some of these Pakistani officers, you know, had sort of grown very attached to a pair of handcuffs that had been worn by a Port Authority cop who died in the 9/11 attacks, and he had a daughter who hadn't even been born yet. Mm-hmm. And when they heard that story, they really sort of, you know, identified with it and used the handcuffs as almost this sort of talisman to, like, you know, give them good luck when they were chasing Al-Qaeda. So I think that there's a lot of credit to go around.
And Terry, I guess one of the troubling things and how we'll leave this segment and how you leave the book is that it is, you make the point that we might be dealing with a KSM-designed or inspired attack for years to come.
Yeah, you know, we already have, actually. The underwear bomber was a KSM inspiration. The cargo plane out of Yemen was a KSM inspiration. And then beyond inspiration, there's very likely people that KSM selected and dispatched as sleeper agents still out there. We don't know when or if they'll come alive, but we know they're there.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that briefly, I mean, you know, he was almost like a baseball coach. He was really good at finding young talent and developing it, and he had, you know, a bunch of protégés who were, you know, like him, could speak English, they could speak Arabic, they could also speak the languages of South and Southeast Asia. One guy in particular, his name is Adnan El-Shukr Juma, and he grew up in Miami, and he's still out there, and some people think that he's leading what's left of Al-Qaeda. But, you know, they're concerned that there's a lot of other KSM, you know, proteges still out there on the loose.
The name of the book is The Hunt for KSM, Inside the Pursuit and Takedown of the Real 9/11 Mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. The book is published by Little Brown. Terry McDermott and Josh Mara, I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Hunt for KSM, published by Little Brown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.